we've seen that they've been a source of broader violence, almost mob violence or riot violence in some places like Myanmar, and that they've sort of encouraged this more broader scale inspiration of violence that isn't necessarily linked to a specific organization. And as a result, there have been even countries that have felt they needed to shut down social media in the wake of attacks. We saw this happen in Sri Lanka. So there's some real problems, too, with the encouragement of inciting violence, especially against minorities in a number of countries, that the tech companies seem to have really fallen behind on how to handle that. And now governments are taking it into their own hands and shutting down the social media companies, which for periods of time, which comes with its own problems when it's a government decision to sort of censor in that way. So that's another issue that the tech companies I need to sort of get up to speed much more quickly than they have.
Does the government need to play a stronger role in what the tech companies are doing with reference to these problems?
At a minimum, it seems like the government could provide assistance to help this happen more quickly. Again, this is not the first time, the first cycle of dealing with these issues. This has now been an issue for some time with numerous jihadist organizations. So in these other realms, there should already be the establishment of policies and lessons learned and best practices that could be more quickly applied. And if the government can provide any assistance in that realm, it seems like a good idea. But if it comes to sort of regulating what the social media companies are doing, it seems like that would get problematic pretty quickly.
And as we know, ISIS has taken full advantage of the internet and social media to further its objectives, but it's also sought to make alliances and create partnerships. And you've written about this in your book. Tell us about how this works again.
It's interesting because ISIS seems to have taken a quantity over quality approach to its relationships. It's allying with groups that sometimes we don't even know are groups when they claim these alliances and these sort of fractured elements and splinter groups. And even in the recent weeks, it broke one of its own provinces into two. There was the Khorasan province, and now, which previously included Pakistan, and now Pakistan has its own province. So it's really leaning on this idea of alliance and alignments to project itself is expanding, even in some ways that are, you know, sort of questionable, especially because it's long eschewed national boundaries and that it sort of fell back onto national boundaries when it declared this Pakistan province and affiliate. But some of these relationships appear to have much depth to them. Some of them do, especially some of the early ones, but the ones that they're claiming more recently, there's some questions about whether they're even really alliances versus, as you say, alignments, whether there's actually much cooperation and depth behind some of these, or whether they're just mostly ISIS trying to really project itself as, yes, we lost the territory, but we can still show we're expanding through these alignments with groups in Central Africa and as well as in South Asia and other places.
Tricia Bacon is the author of the book Why Terrorist Groups Form International Alliances. She's also an assistant professor at the American University School of Public Affairs. J.J. Green, WTOP News.